Growing up in Marin County, California, Maj Jobrani's life was apple pie American until he went home each night. In his new memoir, he recalls the expectations of his proudly Persian parents, and being a comedian wasn't one of them. As a kid, he wanted to be American, but he used his experiences as an Iranian immigrant to shape his brand of comedy.
I don't know if you heard about this. A little while ago in the U.S., there was a Muslim family walking down the aisle of an airplane, talking about the safest place to sit on the plane. Some passengers overheard them, somehow misconstrued that as terrorist talk, got them kicked off the plane. It was a family, mother, father, child, walking down the aisle, talking about the seat. And that was a Middle Eastern male. I know there's certain things I'm not supposed to say on an airplane in the U.S., right? I'm not supposed to be like walking down the aisle and be like, "Hi, Jack!" You know, that's not cool. Even if I'm there with my friend named Jack, I say, "Greetings, Jack. Salutations, Jack." Never hi, Jack.
Maj Jobrani joins us by phone from his home in Los Angeles. And Maj, it's a pleasure. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. How are you?
Well, I'm well. Your new book is called "I'm Not a Terrorist, But I've Played One on TV, and It's True." How did you wind up facing off with Chuck Norris on the small screen?
Well, you know, some people just get the luck of the draw.
yeah,
it was early in my career, and I always say jokingly that when you're of Middle Eastern descent in Hollywood, the types of auditions you get, you know, they tend to say, "Oh, you're Middle Eastern, great. Can you say, 'I will kill you in the name of Allah'?"
yeah,
you know. And even if you argue, you go, "Well, what if I play the doctor in this film?" They go, "Okay, then you can hijack the hospital."
yeah.
So that's the kind of auditions that were coming in, and I ended up doing a Chuck Norris movie of the week. This was before September 11th. I was playing an Afghan terrorist who goes to Chicago to blow up a building. And I had trouble accepting it, even though it was early in my career. I knew that it was demeaning in many ways, but I thought, you know what, I can bring some, through my acting, I will show why this guy is doing what he's doing. I'm going to humanize him a little bit, be a thespian. And so I went to the wardrobe fitting, and they said, "Here's your shirt, here's your pants, and here's your turban." And I said, "Oh, wait a minute." I said, "Afghans in America don't wear turbans." I said, "Indian Sikhs wear turbans. We need to get this right." And the lady was like, "Dude, this is a Chuck Norris movie." So I don't know.
What are you thinking, Maz? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, at one point, you'd had enough of playing terrorists. Why?
Like I said, it felt bad doing it. And even though, again, there was other roles that were coming up as well. But early on, a lot of the auditions tended to be for those types of parts. I just didn't feel good doing it. I actually came back after the Chuck Norris filming, and I told my agents no more terrorist parts. And then the TV show 24 called, and they said, "We have a terrorist." And I said, "No, thank you." And then they said, "But he changes his mind halfway through the mission." And I was like, "Ooh, the ambivalent terrorist." I said, "That sounds interesting." So that was the last terrorist part I played. And in all honesty, I've actually, over the past 10, 12 years, anytime an audition's come up for a terrorist part, I've said no to it. And the more I've thought about it, the more I realize that it actually has real-world repercussions. Because if you think about it, I've traveled all over the Middle East doing stand-up comedy, and I know people, I know Arabs, I know Muslims, and most of those people are good people. But unfortunately, I would say that a majority of the way that most people from that part of the world are depicted when we see them on film and television, I would argue that it's often as terrorists or bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I know now I've heard of stories of, you know, anytime ISIS does something, kids in schools that are the kids that are Muslim or Middle Eastern getting picked on or beat up because of something that ISIS did. So you realize there's real world repercussions. And so you go, you know what, I want to stop doing those parts. And I want to try to hopefully change the image and do stuff where people start seeing Middle Easterners and Muslims in a positive way.
Mm-hmm. What did your family think of the terrorist roles that you were playing, at least early on?
I don't think they liked it either. You know, I jokingly, I say my mother kept seeing me die, and she would say, "Why you keep dying?" and I would say, "Well, that's how they're written." She said, "Well, why don't you kill them one time?" You know, and I was like, "I can't just kill them." She goes, "Yeah, when they say lights, camera, you go. Don't wait for action." But yeah, nobody, you know, my parents didn't look they weren't happy about my choice of being an actor in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Because coming from an immigrant background, I would say that most immigrant parents want their kids to be lawyers and doctors, and that's what my parents wanted for me. And it took me a while. So I actually was first going to study political science to become a lawyer. Then at some point I decided I want to be a professor. And even my mother even afraid of that. She said, there's no work for professors. What are you doing? And I said, how do you know the marketplace for professors? She had no idea about this. So she still was pushing me. And finally, when I dropped out of a PhD program to pursue acting, she goes, listen, you did not become a lawyer. You did not become a professor. At least become a mechanic. And I'm not kidding. She suggested that. And I said, why mechanic? And here's the mentality. She'd come from a revolution. We left Iran at the 79 revolution.
Mm-hmm.
So in her mind, she was thinking, if I learn to be a mechanic, once the revolution happens in America, which she knows is coming,
mm-hmm.
then I can be a mechanic anywhere in the world. And so she would say, she said, people need mechanics. No one needs an actor.
Oh, that's funny. To what extent do you think, Maz, that the roles for folks like you who come from the Middle East are beginning to evolve in this country? Are you seeing any progress on that front, or is it the same old, same old?
You know, it's kind of two steps forward, you know, one step back.
Yeah.
You know, I still see a lot of films, even some films. You know, the unfortunate thing is that our most recent history also deals with a lot of stuff with the Middle East. So, even films that deal with the war in Iraq, you may have a couple of good characters that are Iraqi, but you're still going to have the bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like, you know, I always point out that when The Sopranos came out, some Italians were upset about the depiction of Italians in The Sopranos. But Italians at least had the family from Everybody Loves Raymond. And other examples of Italians that were more positive on television. We haven't had that yet. And I think that people from that part of the world need to have a little bit more of that. It's just a normalization to show. I mean, like I said, when I travel throughout the Middle East, you see people dressed in regular Muslim garb, and those are accountants and they're lawyers and they're just people doing their thing and going to work. But if you watched Fox News all the time, you would think that anybody dressed like that is going to try to kidnap you.
Yeah. I was really struck when you got your big break in comedy at the Comedy Store in Los Angeles that they made an unusual request of you to make a change in your act. What did they want you to do?
Yeah, what happened was, so the owner of the Comedy Store, Mitzi Shore, who is Pauly Shore's mother and a guru of comedy, the Comedy Store was famous for being the place where a lot of big names like Jay Leno and Letterman and all those guys, they all went through there. So my hope was to become a regular there. And when I became a regular, Mitzi is, has been, I thank her for my career because really I grew at that club. But the one thing that did happen when I first became a regular, when she made me a regular and said, you can start performing here, she also asked me, she said, have I thought about wearing the outfit? And I said, what outfit? And she goes, you know, the gown and the hat. And I said, the gown and the hat? And she goes, you know, the thing. And I was like, oh, no. I'm thinking to myself, she's asking me to wear a turban on stage and a dishdasha. And it was this moment of like, what do I say? Like, do I sell myself out? And I just looked at her and I said, sure, Mitzi, I'll wear the outfit. And no sooner than I said that, than I walked it past her. And then I started thinking, oh my God, I just agreed to wearing a turban on stage.
Mm.
And then I got into this thing where I was like, I'm not going to wear a turban on stage. And so it became a debate with the club's booker and myself. And the way I got out of it finally I'd found out that there was an Iranian in Los Angeles who'd been wearing a turban and making fun of the mullahs. And someone had shown up at one of his events and thrown a rock and blinded him.
Oh.
So I called the club. I said, listen, I'll wear the turban, but just so you know, someone may show up and try to take me out, and worse yet, they might try to take the club out. And and they called me back. They said, you know what, just wear something casual. Don't worry about the turban. So I got out of it.
Well, that was thinking. Well, when you talk about the Iranian community in your act, you put on an accent, and I'm wondering, how is that different than dressing up?
Well, you know, the accent is playing out a character, you know, and I think that that's one thing. Like, you know, you'll see comedians doing their mother or their uncle or whatever. You know, when Eddie Murphy did his special Delirious, he had all these different characters that he would do, and the voices would change. And I do the same. I love doing accents. So whether it's my Iranian mother or it's the my family's, you know, my my wife and kids. My wife is Indian, so sometimes I'll do her father, who's got a thick Indian accent. Sometimes I'll do our nanny, who's Guatemalan, you know. So just I don't mind doing the accents. And, you know, and in all honesty, I don't mind wearing a turban. I honestly don't. I mean, on stage as a stand-up, I wouldn't, because stand-up, ultimately, it's yourself. But I'm saying playing a character in a movie or a TV show, I don't mind wearing a turban. I just don't want to play the terrorist parts.
Yeah.
And like I said, and on stage, I'm me. So the turban and that outfit was a shtick. It was a little, you know, it was something that I didn't want to do. I think Mitzi had thought that would make, you know, distinguish me a lot from a lot of other comedians. And she's been notorious for having suggested things like that in the past. I was talking to Marc Maron, who told me that when he first became a regular at the club, she wanted him to wear a scarf because she thought he was kind of the thinking man's comedian.
Yeah.
And there was another guy, his name was Joey Bananas, who used to do a whole 15 minutes, and at one point he would put on a banana suit for 2 minutes, and Mitzi saw it one time and said, "You should wear the suit the whole time." So this guy started wearing a banana suit. So, and by the way, Mitzi has also had some great successes. Supposedly she was the one who helped Roseanne Barr come up with her character and the clothing the character should wear. So, you know, it wasn't all misses. So she's also done very well with some of them.
Let's listen to a little more Maz Jobrani on stage.
I'd be at the playground playing with my friends, Sam, Brett, Jesse. Life is good. Sure, my name is Maz, but they don't know where that's from. They don't know, right? Everything's cool. Until my dad would come by to pick me up. And he would show up in his Mercedes-Benz, which is a standard Persian issue car. And he would have the car filled with the entire family. For some reason, we can't go anywhere with two of us. There's got to be like 50 of us in the car. I don't know why. Anytime you see a car filled with people, it's either Middle Easterners or Mexicans. It's one of those two. For short trips, my dad would be like, "Okay, everybody in the car. We're going two blocks to pick up Maz. Get grandmother in there. Get grandma, everybody. Get the rooster. Put the rooster in the car. Put the rooster. We can't leave the rooster at home alone. Rahim the rooster. Put him in the car. Put him in the car." And they would show up at the park, this car filled with people. I'd be like, "Oh my God, why'd they bring the whole village?"
Maz Jobrani's new book, I'm Not a Terrorist, But I've Played One on TV. You know, in the book, you do talk a lot about your family, Maz. I mean, your larger-than-life dad and your critical mom. How typical are they in terms of the Iranian-American community?
You know, I think they had some typical traits and some unique traits. They're typical in that they were traditional in many ways. They weren't religious. We were very secular, but they were traditional in, for example, the careers that they wanted us to choose, me and my siblings, or the one thing that they would always push, this is a big thing, is the community. So anytime you wanted to do something that was a little bit kind of out of the norm, they would play the community card. You know, no, don't do that. The community will talk. You know, and I never knew who this community was, but they really pushed that on us. I mean, it was crazy. I a lot of times, you know, my dad would say, "I have a name in the community. Don't ruin my name," and so that kind of kept me on the straight and narrow in many ways. You know, I coming out of high school, I wanted to study acting in college, and my parents had convinced me that I should become a lawyer because, again, the community will speak, and you know, it was amazing. I mean, they
and
really,
you still haven't met that community, have you?
I have not met that. You know what was interesting? Actually, what's great about stand-up comedy is you get to go on stage and it's therapy. I always say this: comedians are doing therapy up there. You get to go on stage and talk about what's on your mind. And one of the best experiences I had, because one thing within the community is you got to be very formal, very respectful of your elders. You don't cuss, no matter what, you don't cuss. And I was always very, very clean in that way. And then at the comedy store, when you perform, sometimes late nights, you know, after going up after a bunch of comedians who might have been doing kind of blue material, you sometimes, you know, you cuss a little bit. It's not a big deal. And so one night I was at the Comedy Store, and my friend's mother, who was a Persian lady, was there, and I'd forgotten. And I started doing my act, and at some point I said a cuss word or two, and then I realized that she was there. And in the middle of the show, in front of everybody else, I turned to her. I'm like, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. I did not mean to use bad language. And that was the community in my mind. And you know, that I thought she's judging me. And what was funny was I'm looking at her. She's cracking up.
Oh, that's, you know, good.
And it was great. It was great. So it's so I've found the community, but I've kind of realized that the community really doesn't care what I do.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned that you came over here, your family came over after the revolution in 79. How tough of an adjustment was that for you as a kid?
Well, as a kid, it was interesting because we left late 78, right as the revolution was starting to happen. There was protests in the streets of Iran. And I always say, I don't think a lot of Iranians knew that the revolution was going to actually succeed. So my father, who had been successful under the Shah, he had happened to be on business in New York. So he sent for my mother to bring my sister and me to New York for our winter break. And basically, I always say we packed for 2 weeks and we stayed for 35 years. That was crazy. Yeah. And that happened with a lot of people. But for me as a kid, it was interesting because I had been learning English in Iran. I was in a multilingual school. And my father, being a successful businessman, he was doing business and staying at the Plaza Hotel in New York across the street from FAO Schwartz, one of the best toy stores in the world. So here I was, a six-year-old, looking out of the window and going like, oh my God, that's this toy store. And I was like, this is amazing. So I was like, this revolution is really working out for me here. You know,
not a bad thing. Yeah.
Not a bad thing at all.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until later when the hostage crisis happened, when it started affecting me as well, because I think that's when kids in our schools started picking on us. You know, back then they would call you an effing Iranian. And I've heard stories now of Iranians getting beaten up and some even getting killed just for being Iranian. And what's interesting is, again, it goes back to what we experience nowadays. When something happens overseas in the Middle East, kids will pick on other kids from the same background, not thinking that, of course, a kid in a school today is not a member of ISIS. You know, a 10-year-old kid in a school is not a member of ISIS. If ISIS does something, it has nothing to do with that kid. Yeah. So I had that similar experience where the hostage crisis happened, and there was a sixth grader who would pick on me and call me an effing Iranian, and I would be like, dude, it's not Iranian, it's Iranian, and secondly, you're bigger than me, so it's whatever you want it to be.
Yeah.
You know, dealing with that.
Yeah. Well, I got to ask you, in just a few minutes we have left, you've been on NPR's Wait, Don't Tell Me panel for nearly 5 years now. Let me play a little clip from Maz Jobrani on Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Maz, according to a new study, people who want to improve their sex lives might start doing what more often?
Swimming. I've read it.
You say with such confidence.
Yeah.
No, because there was a thing that says swimmers are the best lovers this week. You didn't see this?
That was a bumper sticker.
No.
And it's not true. It's not true because competitive swimming men shave their legs, and it makes me feel very uncomfortable.
Ooh. I'm trying to figure out why.
Undulating. They undulate well.
They undulate.
Think about it. They swim. You're encouraging. There's a lot of movement in the right direction.
I am so glad our radio audience cannot see the gestures you are making.
And you're sticking with that answer, right, Maz?
I'm telling you, it's crazy when you do wait. You got to read the regular news and you got to look for the crazy news.
Yeah.
And that week, I'd seen there was a study that came out that said swimmers make the best lovers. So when they brought it up, I said, this is it. And then they were going somewhere else. You know what the answer was? It was grilled cheese. They eat grilled cheese.
Is that right?
That's what they were saying. That's the people that eat grilled cheese and make the best lovers. I have no idea how that works.
How did you get involved in that show?
Man, that was a great one. I was a fan of it, and I'd been listening, and then I got a call saying, do I want to be the celebrity call-in once? Because I'd done, I think it was one of my latest comedy specials. So I did the call-in, and then after that they said, would you like to be on the panel? I said, of course I want to be on the panel. And I was so excited about it. I was actually on a vacation in Hawaii with my family and some friends, And I had to fly that day. I was going to fly Hawaii, LA, and then just switch planes and keep going to Chicago. So it was like almost like a 10-hour flight. Mm. And we were having a great time. And my friend was like, "Dude, just can't you cancel this and do it another time?" I was like, "Are you kidding me? This is, wait, don't tell me I'm going." So that was when I first started. I can't believe it's been almost 5 years.
How do you prepare for that thing every week?
You know, when I first started, I thought the goal was to win. And then I realized that for some people it is, but for me, the goal is to have fun and just try to be funny as much as I can. So yeah. What I'll do is I'll just keep my eyes on the news that week. Like I said, you basically the basic news everybody knows and you're expected to get. It's about finding those tricky ones. So I'll go on I'll go on whatever CNN.com or the Time, New York Times or whatever, read a couple of newspapers, but then I'll go on like New York Post, then I'll go on, there's something called FARC, FARC.com, I believe, that mm-hmm. has the craziest news from around the world. I'll look at some of that stuff, and still they'll find something crazy. And the way they set it up, it's like, a man, was rushed to the hospital because while he was getting a milkshake, happened? And then you're like, "Wow, well, I don't know, a donkey ran into him." And they're like, "You're right." You're like, "What?"
Well, Maz Jobrani's new book, "I'm Not a Terrorist, But I've Played One on TV," and what great fun to have you, Maz. Thanks for taking some time with us.
Thanks for having me. You take
bet.
Care.
All the best.
All right, bye-bye.